Hi, welcome to Sacred Conversations with Vision Battlesword. This is an audio series created by me and by the Sacred Light spiritual community for our own benefit as well as for anyone else that might be interested to hear it. This represents a new kind of podcast or a new type of audio series that I call a community conversation. So I'll be talking with the Sacred Light spiritual community and we'll explore all types of topics from truth to philosophy, spirituality, consciousness, psychedelics, and many, many more. And the goal of this is just to explore reality, to explore truth, and to see what all of the different pieces and all the different perspectives are of reality that we can put together into an integration of an entirely new philosophy. So I hope you'll join me for this journey, and without further ado, here's our episode. Thanks.
Well, hey, Lucas.
Hey, Vision.
How are you doing today?
Doing great. It's been a great week.
Nice. Who are you, Lucas Farrar?
I think that I would like for you, or like for anyone that I interact with, to know that I think I'm an action in the world. I'm somebody that is always looking for an action and a response or a result to come from that action. I think that deep down, that's probably something that truly defines me.
Nice. Mm-hmm. What kind of action in the world do you see yourself as?
A lot of the actions that I do in the world come down to a very specific thing, which is surgery. I fix people's problems with their blood vessels. Very specific. It's very narrow. I like it like that. It's kind of my thing. But again, it's very narrow. It's very limiting.
It's funny to me that your self-definition revolves so much around action, because the topic that you brought here today is self-actualization.
Yeah.
And we were just, before we started, we were just kind of glancing over some definitions of just words like actual and actualize, just to see what the dictionary says they mean. And there's so much in those words, the history of those words, that revolves around action, interestingly enough, because I just never had occurred to me to think of it that way before. So I'm just curious, what does self-actualization mean to you?
Well, you know, from getting and from experiencing and from reading, I guess, different downloads of information to my brain or consciousness, I've kind of come to the idea that, and I think a lot of us have a similar idea, that we come into this world to learn certain things or certain lessons, right? And I'm very curious to discover what that is for me. Because I don't know exactly. I mean, I have certain themes that I know are my struggles, are my accomplishments, my strong suits and my not so strong suits. So I think it comes down to that. Like, I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, and we were talking about this, and he came down to the topic of values. So what are my values? And I never really thought about that. What are my values as a human? What do I value? And it's not like you're necessarily like your average loyalty or like all these things, like the pre-described notions that people should have as values, or as society thinks that we should have values. But what deep down inside, what are my values? And I've been exploring that. I'm not 100% clear to name them, to give them a specific name, but I've been very curious about this whole process of just, okay, what is my path? What does my path look like? And how do I walk along that path in the biggest way, I guess? And then the other counter thought to that is, well, what if I just don't choose for that? You know, how much freedom do I have in choosing my own adventure? You know, that's something like a contradicting point of tension of that, and how much freedom do I have to, okay, now I'm going to stop this and I'm going to do something else. Because a lot of humans have done that. A lot of humans have had multiple lives.
Sure.
Most of us have one life. You know?
Maybe so. Maybe so. Or
yeah.
does it seem to you that most people at least have several different phases of life? Like
yes.
chapters, if you will?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. But certain people just break completely mm-hmm. with the storyline and
yeah.
jump to a new storyline. And I find that fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What reminds me, I can't remember if we've ever talked about it before, or if you happen to remember the poster. I had it on display in the
I
last
did.
House.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the 11 Lifetimes poster?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder, that's just resonated for me so strongly. I suppose I could just articulate it real quickly to refresh our memories. I have this poster. It's based on a comic, that like a web comic that I saw many years ago. It was created by a guy by the name of Zach Wienersmith, who does a web comic called Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal. And the gist of it is, based on the sort of 10,000 hours to mastery concept,
mm-hmm.
you can sort of break that down and come up with approximately 7 years. It takes about maybe 7 years, let's say, to master a domain, a craft, a profession, something like that. And so if you just sort of take the average lifespan, or let's say a generous lifespan of a human, like 88 years, and divide that, you know, by the time it takes to, you know, first kind of begin a path to mastery, then actually accomplish that mastery, and then actually make a contribution to that domain, you can come up with about 11, you could have about 11 complete cycles of that, or you could call those like lifetimes. 11 lifetimes. And so the gist of the poster, the comic, is you only live 11 times, which I just think is such a beautiful spin on YOLO, right? Or
yeah.
you only live once.
Yeah.
I've taken to saying something along the lines of Yo 11-0 or something like that to refer to that. But I've really embraced that philosophy, that idea that we can totally redefine ourselves at any point that we want and start a completely new life and even celebrate that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, growing up in Puerto Rico, I think like really, I mean, like a lot of places I imagine, but I feel like it really stifles that freedom, that liberty. And I think it's something about being like enclosed by the sea in a very small space. There's something about everybody behaving in a certain way together cohesively, and that has its positives and it has its negatives. You know, positives are that like everybody's very friendly, very welcoming and such. And negatives are that if you stray from the zeitgeist, I guess, it's frowned upon in a sense. So, you know, you get into these very... You strive for a career, so whatever is a career that society values highly, and then to even think that you're going to do something else, something different, would be very disruptive. You know, yeah, you carry that. You carry, you know, where you come from. You carry, like, your culture. And you come to a place like Austin, which is completely different in a certain thing ways, and you see people not have this weight, and you're like, oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. I wonder how my life would have been different, you know, having these different experiences. But also you see that, okay, I can let go of these things. Yes.
So you notice a cultural difference between people here in Austin versus where you came from in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, it's I think cultural is like a very, it's not even like the right word. It's a certain set of instructions that you come with, you know?
How's that different than culture?
I guess it's the same thing. Yeah.
I don't know. Is it?
No, I think culture encompasses other things. What I'm talking more about is like, you know, this programming.
Programming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Programming.
That's so funny because the... It, as we are recording this conversation right now, the most recent episode that I just released is Programs with Dawn. Did you happen to listen to that one?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating how these conversations are evolving and building on each other and completely organically. Like I didn't couldn't have planned it this way. And yet,
yeah,
it's just coming together. So you notice that there's a program in, maybe you don't want to call it the culture, Puerto Rican culture, but at the very least in that society, that micro society, let's say,
yeah,
that has something to do with picking one track and staying with it?
With safety.
I see.
Yeah, with safety and risk.
I see.
Yeah, there's an aversion to risk, which makes a lot of sense historically, just because people that have lived in that place have gone through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
As a lot of people, but there is an aversion to risk, a certain type of risk.
Mm-hmm.
And not being connected to a landmass has something to do with it. Being surrounded by the ocean, I think, in a way is beautiful, but in a way it's like it's limiting in a way. That because of the flow of information, I think probably flows different than if you're like in a center of a landmass or something. That's my theory. I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's something about island culture or island life that's just fundamentally different. I mean, I suppose any different type of geography, maybe,
yeah,
whether it's coastal, mountainous, inland, landlocked.
Yeah.
These are probably all going to have different, there's going to be different consciousness that arises just from the environment, from the stimulation and the realities of getting along with that environment or creating safety in that kind of an environment.
Yeah, no, for sure, 100%.
It's interesting that you bring up safety to me, because starting from self-actualization, and I asked you, what does self-actualization mean to you? It sounds to me, what I'm hearing is you're talking a lot about self-actualization has something to do with being able to choose your own path in life. And then bringing up your experience in Puerto Rico and the connection that you think that societal programming has to the idea of safety reminds me of Maslow's hierarchy.
Mm.
So that's that sort of classical pyramid stage development model. That starts with physiological needs. It's a hierarchy of needs, I guess I should say. Starting with physiological, then safety, then love or belonging, then esteem, and then finally self-actualization. That's the simplified version, five stages. So safety is kind of like the second tier of that pyramid. I don't know, what do you think about that model and how it relates to your idea of self-actualization? Does that mean anything to you?
So it does make sense. It's difficult to categorize yourself where you are in that pyramid and where other people are around you. So, yeah, so given that context and reality, I guess I'm probably the wrong person to ask that question to. What do you think?
Well, we had a really interesting conversation about this, me and you and another one of our friends from our men's group. If you remember that day by the creek.
Yeah.
We had a really interesting conversation where we were bringing up a lot of the similar content, and it occurred to me that there could be both stages and states at play with self-actualization. Like, I guess what came up for me on that day, which was felt like a new thought, was that the idea of self-actualization kind of can be on a spectrum that could occur at any different stage of human development. Like, so it doesn't, I think, fully resonate for me anymore. It did at one time. It made sense. Maslow's hierarchy made a lot of sense to me at one time. And other stage developmental models still do. But it doesn't totally follow for me that self-actualization is sort of like a thing that you achieve or a state of being that you acquire once certain other a hierarchy of certain other fundamental needs have been met. Like, I'm not looking at it that way anymore. I'm sort of looking at it as I can be on some spectrum of self-actualization even while I'm meeting my physiological needs, or even while I'm meeting my needs for safety or meeting my needs for love and belonging. I'm kind of feeling right now that it's like on a different axis altogether, actually. That it has something more to do with an inner sense of empowerment to be self-directed, or I guess to be self-authoring. That's another word that I sometimes hear used, is self-authoring.
And by authoring, meaning you're the author of your own story, or by authoring is more of like authority?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I've always thought of it as, yes, you're the author of your own story, for sure, but you're even sort of the author of your own self-definition, your own personality. Like to me, I that's my sense of what self-actualization is really kind of all about, or I think what people are getting at is it's sort of that state of being when you, like what you're talking about, coming from Puerto Rico and then to Austin and having a completely different experience of what's possible. It's like that state of not just breaking free from, but actually having the self-reflection to see the story that you have, that someone else has authored for you, that you've been living in, and now realizing, oh, wait, I can actually rewrite this any way that I want.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, that makes complete sense. And I sometimes think about that. And I was like, sometimes we can see people making a mistake, right? And you can clearly see, okay, that's a mistake. Or that's something really good from a level of like higher knowledge or experience or judgment. And sometimes I think, oh, like, I wonder what someone that has more experience, more judgment than me can see, can point out the mistake that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sometimes I find myself thinking that, and it somehow it comes back to what you were saying. Yeah, but like coming to a different place and seeing other possibilities, there's probably another state of being or place or group of people that offers even more possibilities. And there's a level above that probably that offers even more possibilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think about those things sometimes. I was like, I wonder what's the limit? Is there a limit, you know? And I think that's where like this concept of self-actualization comes in. It's like, you know, how much can I learn? How much discernment can I be able to obtain in the way we navigate life with an expanded level of possibilities, an expanded level of again, choosing correctly or choosing what is truer to me. Not correct, but truer, probably. So all these, like, it's like a game like that I've been obsessing over lately. Of that, it's just like, okay, let me explore this. It's also like daunting because you realize the magnitude of what you're against, right? And you're like, okay, how do I start chipping at this? This is a big mountain that I have to chip down.
Tell me more about that. I'm not quite following you right at the end there.
Yeah.
What is the thing that we're against, or what is that mountain? Why do we have to chip away at it?
Well, I guess I see a lot of things in the world as problems and solutions. In this choose your own adventure story, you know, as I keep going through storylines, learning, I keep experiencing, I keep feeling different truths. Because there's a difference between, I feel like there's a difference between knowledge and rational way of understanding the truth and feeling truth. And as you know, as I've had different experiences, I feel like the things that have transformed me the most are moments in which I've felt different truths. And I think that has taken my life to a different place. And every single time I feel a new truth, I feel like my life changes slightly in a positive way. So it's a game. It's like a little game that we play, and then somehow there's a nugget at some point in this side story that you didn't expect, and you're like, oh, and it takes you to a different side story, and it feels like a little puzzle that you're trying to solve, you know, and it feels like there's the direction comes in very subtle ways that can sometimes be, you know, difficult to grasp at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that resonates a lot for me. The game, the puzzle, side quests, all of those things resonate for me, and kind of how I look at life and self-actualization and what that means. I'm still curious though a little bit about that piece you brought up a moment ago about what you were talking about with it feeling like there's something big that's against us or that we have to kind of chip away at. What does that mean? Or do you still feel that way, or was that just kind of a...
It feels, yeah, I don't, I guess it, sometimes it feels like we're striving, sometimes I feel like I'm striving for something that I can't define.
Yeah.
Again, it's all a point of reference, and it may come from, again, programming. I think part of my programming is this, like, life is a battle thing that might not be as useful. It might be useful in one scenario, but like I think maybe when you go into different paths, maybe that framework doesn't really work. But it does sometimes feel like life is a battle.
Is it like the battle itself is just to figure out what the true path is for oneself?
Yeah, I think the battle, yeah, for sure, that's a major part of it. And I would like to stop calling it a battle because it's kind of like more, if you name the way you name things, this what they become, it's more like a beautiful exploration. But yeah, but there are other things. There's things in daily life. There's tests in daily life, especially in the way you strive for things. I feel like one of the rules of the game is that if you strive for something in the path for that, for whatever it is that you strive for, you there will be a moment where life puts a little challenge. It's like, oh, do you really want this? Oh, let's show me. Show me how much you really want this. And I think we talked about that at some point. You know, sometimes is life telling you this isn't for you, this isn't the best thing for you, or sometimes I feel like is life just asking how much you really want something. And I've experienced both. I experienced things where I said, oh, I should have just let that go. That did not serve me. Or, and I experienced other things where I'm like, oh, thank God that I did that. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's that, again, discernment, like being able to discern, like when you see a roadblock, it's like, is this something I should solve or push through? Or is this something where I just take a different turn?
I think we've brought some pretty interesting pieces out on the table here. There's a piece that I want to circle back around to at some point about learning. And you touched on that. That was one of the first things you said when I asked you about self-actualization, and then you touched on it a couple of times since then. There's something I think is real important and interesting, which is this idea of truth, of finding one's truth, the true path, that feeling of truth, which is different than thinking or knowing, thinking we know what's true. And then when life, dot, 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 like life wants to show me something, life is telling me this is not the right way, life. And I'm just curious about that concept of thinking of life as a person or
Yeah,
thinking of
as an
like
entity.
as an entity with a personality or like intentions. And that's kind of, I'm kind of curious about that.
That is curious. I've never thought about that.
Is that how you think of life? Or what do you really mean by life? I suppose maybe is a different question.
That I don't know. That's a really good question. It does feel like there's a script, there's a force. I think we've all felt that. Yeah, and I definitely like there's certain like moments where it just shows you its hand. There are certain moments where you have a thought, like it happened to me. I was thinking about something related to career, and I was on a plane, you know, 30,000 feet, no signal. And I said, okay, when I was waiting for someone to schedule a meeting and it was taking time. And I was like, why is this taking so much time? I have the person's phone number. I can just schedule the meeting myself. But it's like, you know, this person was wanted to arrange it. And then when I was out there, I was like, you know what? When this plane lands, I'm just going to make a phone call to this person directly and make the meeting, have the meeting. As soon as I land, get a little text message sound. The person that was supposed to schedule had sent a text. Okay, we're doing this dinner meeting at this day next week. And I was like, oh, that's hilarious. That is hilarious that I was just thinking that and boom. So what is that? Is that just me? Is just me and my thoughts calling things? Am I acting through a medium? Like we're all act and connecting through this medium, and when somehow we make a mutual connection, things materialize. I guess, I don't know. That's life.
Okay, that's life. So life is whatever that thing is that's tying us all together into some kind of coherent, seemingly orchestrated, seemingly
then
connected.
We act upon it and it acts upon us. And that's super interesting because there's all this talk about, you know, and we kind of all know it. Like there's this talk about manifestation, and even the people that are not really into like alternative spiritual consciousness, whatever. It's in the zeitgeist. My little niece talks about it. My mom talks about it. It's this thing that people talk about because we experience it. Everybody experiences that. Mm-hmm. My dad used to call it causalities instead of casualidades, something random. Mm. It's not random. It's just there's a cause to that event. So causality.
Causality. Yeah. I see.
So we've known about this, but so there is this interaction. There's interaction with whatever.
With something. A force, consciousness.
Yeah. And somewhere in there is our path to self-actualization. I think it wants us to do that.
Mm.
It feels like it wants us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like you asking it.
Mm.
You know, through whatever your practice is, through like, you know, through, and you come to realize this, there's really simple things. It's just like, okay, wake up early in the morning, get some sunlight, stare into nothing. Mm-hmm. And these thoughts come into your mind and they kind of guide you. And if you do it consistently, it's better. If you do it not as consistently, it's not as good or it's not as fast.
But is self-actualization kind of the process of learning how to guide yourself?
Well, it is the result of guiding yourself.
Mm.
It seems like what I've gathered from, again, small experiences is like, okay, if you follow these things that are in the zeitgeist, they're everywhere. You just have to pay attention. If you gather these things, then you open the door.
Mm.
Like there's this guy in India that was like a robber, like a thief or something, and then one day he just decided to like go under a tree and just meditate by just saying Rama consistently. So Rama, I think it's like the word for God or something.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he got like a download of information and wrote like the Book of Rama or something like that, which is one of the major texts, and like supposedly I may be getting this completely wrong, but that kind of feels like true. It kind of feels like if you clear your mind and if you do these things to help you clear your mind, you will get these keys of information, of feeling truth that you can act upon in your life. And they kind of guide you. They kind of like show you. They kind of like these things starts happening. You know, you meet this person that actually was really great to do these other things.
Almost like we're an antenna or a receiver that can pick up this signal from life.
From life.
But we're full of static.
Exactly.
We're full of interference. And
exactly.
If we just can clear that out, quiet that out, then all of a sudden the signal just comes right through.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I feel like that's, I guess, the process I'm trying. That's what I think I want to head to. Like, that's the kind of like the direction I'm like, okay, this is kind of what I think I need to do. Although I'm clueless about it.
Mm.
It's like, it might be or it might not be. It might be way more complex than that.
But a minute ago, you said that learning how to guide yourself is the result of self-actualization.
No. I think I feel like what it feels to me that is the path or is to do these things, these actions in your life, being what, and they're probably different for different people, that allow you to clear your mind, to have these events happen in your life, to have these realizations of very specific things. It's incredible how we know so many things, but we just haven't integrated them into our brain. It's really incredible.
It seems to happen when sort of like, I a lot of times I think of it, you used the puzzle analogy earlier, and a lot of times I think of it that way. Like, we have these life experiences, or we stumble across some new information. One way or another, a piece of data comes to us, either from our own lived experience or from exposure to it. And each one of these data are like a puzzle piece. And we've got these puzzle pieces, and they're different colors and different shapes, and it's abundantly unclear how they go together, or even if they go together, if this is even pieces of the same puzzle.
Yeah.
And then, but somehow or other, our brains just keep sort of like stirring them around and trying different pieces to see if they fit over and over and over again. It's like the just sort of the natural integration process, the thing that we're doing. And then eventually you get that one piece that's the linchpin, right? It's like, and you couldn't have possibly predicted it. It's like, why that thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that thing drops in, and all of a sudden, all of these pieces click together.
Yeah.
And you can see the picture. And it's like, oh, I wish I'd known that 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that. But there's still something about what you're saying that I want to get cleared up for myself, which is, you're talking about this process, or you're talking about this state of self-actualization, and then you're also talking about this experience of receiving this kind of guidance, or receiving this clarity from somewhere, from life, from the universe, or the collective consciousness, whatever that is. So there's something that feels a little at odds to me about that, where on the one hand, there's something that feels a little fatalistic, meaning just that, like, there is a path for me, and what's mine to do is to discover it, or to allow that information to come in, which will guide me to it. But it's sort of like, it's there for me waiting if I can just find the correct direction to go. But then on the other hand, what self-actualization means to me more so is that idea of choosing my own path. You know, even creating my own path. Like,
yeah,
maybe there is a path over there, but you know what? I've got a machete.
Yeah.
And like, that self-authoring is like, nope, we're going this way.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious how you reconcile that, or help reconcile that for me in terms of what you think of as self-actualization.
Well, I don't know. Well, that's so free will. Does free will exist?
Mm-hmm.
I have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for me, it comes from the idea of self-actualization comes from my grandfather, who was grew up very poor with like a genetic deformity, very little education, but somehow managed to live an amazing life filled with success, with love, with really creating something that lasts to this day. And I feel like, and you know, at the end, he has so much like inner peace and knowledge, and it was crazy. It's really amazing. You know, so how did he achieve that? And I feel like that is kind of like what I'm trying to emulate in a way. So what is my version of that? Because I see that you cannot choose that, and then you can have a different life.
What does that look like? What does the not choosing of that type of path look like?
It looks like acting like living life, making decisions in life based on fear instead of possibilities.
Mm, yeah.
I think that's one of the big things, just conquering those fears.
Mm-hmm.
In that, there is free will, because we choose to do that, right? And I think in that, you know, being aware of that limited mindset that fear gives you, it is kind of where we have to exert our free will. And just like know deep down that there is abundance for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's difficult. That's a difficult thing to do. Now, I also somehow deep down inside feel the possibility that I could erase this life that I've built for myself and have a completely different life. And it would be equally as great. That seems farther away from my reality.
I think that is self-actualization.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I think being in that place, being in that place where you not only have that realization, but you also feel comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that erasing your current life and starting a new one would necessarily be comfortable.
Yeah.
But I mean being comfortable with that as a possibility, knowing that you could choose that.
Yeah.
And having the confidence, I think, in yourself to maybe not necessarily, you know, having like certainty that you'll succeed, but having a confidence that you're going to give it your best, yeah. you know, that, and that you're not going to be afraid, that you're going to turn toward possibility instead of away from opportunity because you've mastered your fear in yeah. that way. I think that's really what it is.
Yeah. So again, yeah, it's fears. So maybe this concept of self-actualization is being able to understand fear, but move past it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's something that I've again struggled with.
I just want to drop in my own perspective on free will. I have a kind of very practical perspective on this or approach to this question, which is it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because it looks like we have free will and we might as well behave as if we have free will.
Really, to me, it looks like we don't have free will.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Because I just see patterns and people repeat it over and over again. And I was like, oh, this pattern is so boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I deal with patients that have, you have to do certain things for a long time to come to my office. And it's the same things. People do the same things.
Meaning you kind of engage in certain lifestyle choices or behaviors yeah. that lead to certain types of health conditions that land you
in my office.
In your office.
Yeah. And the answer is very simple. I heard recently someone say, like in a podcast, say the gates of hell are locked from within. You can open it at any time and get out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so my daily experience when I have clinic every Wednesday is like, oh, there's very little free will. Because you tell them it's okay. You know, it's clear as day. Your body doesn't like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You should stop doing it. This is how not to do it.
See, to me, noticing someone making a repetitive choice isn't an argument necessarily against free will. It doesn't necessarily prove that whatever they're doing is predetermined.
What if it's like not just one person, but just like a mass of people? Does that change anything? Like a big group of people with similar life experiences all tend to make the same mistake.
That seems obvious, right?
Yeah, we're worse than free will in that.
Again, just noticing that someone makes a predictable choice based on the patterns of their lived experience or the programming that they've been exposed to, or the, let's say, predispositions of our animal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, to me, just because something's predictable doesn't mean it's unchangeable. Or that it's
100%, yeah.
And so, but this, I think there is an interesting exploration there to be had. And I'm certainly, I'm sympathetic to a kind of fatalism or, you know, I'm susceptible to even a kind of fatalism in terms of there's something demoralizing about, you know, watching repetitive choices get made or repetitive mistakes happen. But at the same time, it kind of brings me back to like the second practical perspective that I have on free will, which is just, okay, whether or not you agree with me that it looks like we do have it, all right, that's arguable. But regardless of that, we might as well behave as if we do have it.
Yeah.
Because what's the alternative?
I don't know,
it just, that doesn't make, that piece doesn't make sense to me. It's like, how does, my question back to kind of free will determinists is, well, how does this inform my behavior? How do I behave differently if I agree with you? How do you behave differently?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, okay, let's just scratch this one. Interesting philosophical question, but
yeah.
from the perspective of my own subjective experience, it's like it seems like I can make choices, and why would I not want to live that way?
No, 100%. I agree. And another thing I heard someone say once is that they tried to do is introduce randomness into their lives every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a really good advice. Just do something different every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
But the universe knew they were going to do that.
Maybe. Or you did when you chose to come right. here as this form.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to come back to that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Because
that was the first thing you said. I remember you said, when I asked you, what is self-actualization? You said, well, so we come here, we come into these bodies, we come into this life, this existence, because there's something here for us to learn. Is that, you believe that?
I do believe that there is something, there is a pro, I feel like there is a process through which, like, divinity, I get the word cleaning itself, it comes into mind, but that makes no sense. There is a process through which divinity expresses itself. And for some reason, it takes my form, it takes your form, it takes the form of that leaf. And I think that there is learning. I mean, what does learning even mean, I guess? Experience. And you know, this concept is around everywhere also. It's like these ideas are all over the place. But I feel like some people are having these ideas pop into their brain after going through certain experiences. And a lot of people are having the same idea.
Yeah.
I've heard it in different continents, from different levels of education, from different, like, cultural backgrounds, time and periods. Like, this is not a new concept. There are certain things that appear to be true because they empirically come out in circumstances that are not related across time, culture, experiences and such. So this idea that divinity comes to experience itself as the best and the worst, you know, we've been the best and we've been the worst. We've been trees that have consciousness that operate in different time frames than us. We've been everything. So I think that, you know, whatever my form is at this moment is here to have a certain experience. I kind of explored the idea, or I had this kind of, again, like, download formation of on the exploration of free will. And I don't still truly understand it, but I kind of saw for me that I had two arcs in life. Because I saw that there is one arc which was shorter, but I came to understand that it wasn't good or bad, that it was shorter. There was another arc next to it that was longer, and both were equally good, just that it's just there were different experiences, and I could choose. How many arcs are there?
This happened in a dream, did you say?
No, this happened in a ceremony.
Oh, in a ceremony.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so how about this? Let's try this on for size. Based on everything you told me so far, what if the process of becoming self-actualized, or the state of self-actualization, is actually flipping that switch from predeterminism to free will?
Yeah.
And as you described it, we start out in this kind of state of where we are actually being driven by our programs, by our programming. Mm. We're not actually fully awake in a way. We are actually kind of just following the path that's been predetermined for us, but that there is a way to unlock our next level of consciousness in a way. And that is actually what we call self-actualization, which starts with that self-reflection of, like, whoa, I'm here in a meat suit with a computer brain and I've been programmed. Like, whoa, wait a second. And then from there to become self-authoring, to say, oh, wait, can I change my code?
Yeah.
Can I change my own code? Can I even change my physical form? Could I choose a different path? Are there different paths available? What does life tell me about that question? Right? All of these, this idea of kind of like a higher state of awareness, which includes self-awareness. Maybe that's what we mean by self-actualization. And maybe that's what we mean if we say that we've come here to learn and to gain experience, is to kind of to get to that point where we can now actually make a contribution, giving back to life in a way of, like, new experience or new ideas or new paths to explore. And that's what life, as you say, life wants us to do that. Maybe that's what life wants. It wants that freshness that we can only add through the expression of our free will.
That feels like there's some truth in there. So then how does that process look like? It's like, I'm very, like, you know, scientific in the way I view the world based on, like, my training. So every single time, you know, these questions are answered, my next question is, okay, what's step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? to this, you know? What's the secret sauce?
Well, how's it gone for you so far?
There is a component to like a routine when you first wake up. There's something about that moment of coming out of sleep, which is, you know, think about sleeping. It's crazy. Like, right? Where are we? Right?
Dude, and don't get me started on dreams.
I know.
What is that all about?
I know. Yeah. Interestingly, I never remember my dreams.
Mm. I have that a lot too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I rarely remember them. Also.
I rarely, but I know. Yeah. I know I must have them. But anyways, that process of waking up and just like getting into your body by sitting down, being calm. For me, I like making a coffee. That's part of my routine. And then Dawn taught me this about stretching. Something about it just me, and then the sun like hitting your face.
Mm.
For a little bit. If I do those things, I feel like I operate at a different level. And this is kind of comes from like the human optimization part of it, but it also like, if you do those things enough, after a certain while, ideas, realizations just start popping into your brain. And that's the secret sauce, right? It's just mm-hmm. information. Mm-hmm. It's all about information.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it takes consistency, and then so it takes resilience. So it takes like, you know, dealing with all these things that hinder your resilience.
There's a word that comes to mind, which is discipline.
Yeah.
I love, you mentioned Dawn. I love Dawn's spin on discipline, where she brings it back to the root word disciple.
Mm, yeah, she mentioned that. Yeah.
To become a disciple to whatever it is, your practice, your dream, your journey.
And somehow that's a really powerful, it gives you purpose to be a disciple. I like the idea of being a disciple. There's like truthness, and there's like an honor thing of being like committed to something.
Yeah, it's a totally different energy, right? Like that word discipline, it immediately invokes what punishment, mm-hmm. you know, childhood punishment, memories, or an idea of pain and suffering of you know, through working hard and things of this nature. But a disciple, like that invokes like a student, a learner, a person on a path to enlightenment.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And there's something noble about being a disciple of something, you know, there's choosing something and giving your all to it.
But anyway, you were just saying about how there's a daily practice, or there's practices that can sort of help you to clear your mind to allow that information to come through.
Yeah. The most powerful one that I've, it's probably the most difficult one, is semen retention. For some reason, that gives you a level of clarity, determination, creativity. It's like, I did it for like a month. And just in my daily like experience in my work, it was crazy. It was really crazy. I remember like there was like this, I'm going to go into like some technical stuff, but there was this person that had a plaque in their carotid artery. And to fix that, you open it up, take the plaque out, and you put a patch. That can get infected. Gets infected. The patch, the suture breaks down. And then you get something called a pseudoaneurysm, which is where blood is outside the blood vessel, but contained by the tissue around it in a very like unstable way. And it's a mess. You know, the human body has planes, which is super like interesting. So it has planes through which you can navigate your way through. There are avascular planes where there are no blood vessels. And that's how you navigate yourself and you find what you need to find. And when you get in those planes, it's beautiful. Things just like open themselves magically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once you operate on someone, those planes get destroyed. And with infection, it's even worse. So it just, there's no plane. Everything's mushed together and it's all like infection and whatever. So when you have that, you can't dive into it because the person's going to exsanguinate in front of you. You have to first control blood going in and blood coming out.
Exsanguinate is to die
bleed
from
out.
Bleeding. Yeah.
It's gonna, okay. The person's going to bleed out in front of you. So, and the neck is a very, like, it's a small space. So it's a problem. It's a simple problem, but it's a complex problem at the same time. And I kind of like came into this problem and I was like, oh, fuck. How am I going to fix this? And then I realized that a tool I used for something else could be used to get that control from the inside. And that way I could just like dive into it, remove that tool and get the normal control I usually get. Out of nowhere, this idea just like came into my mind. And it could have come even if I wasn't doing all these things, but it felt like I was in that place to just be able to get that information from somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I came up with that. I don't think I came up with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
The idea came to me from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So these things, that's something very like trivial to and very specific to what I do, but it was very meaningful for that person. Yeah, because they had a good outcome. They went home. In the same way, I think you can have ideas that can come and affect your life in a positive way when you are open and when you do these practices. So anyways, that's one of the, I was really surprised. And I don't, you know, I saw some YouTube videos and some I've never heard anybody talking about it, but somebody came to me and was like, oh, I'm going to try this. And I try, and every, like after like the first 14 days are hard as fuck. But then afterwards, you get this amount of energy that's incredible. It's addictive. And you're like, oh, this is why the concept of like celibacy is like all over the place.
Hmm.
It's nothing to do with any moral thing. It's all about like, oh, this is like a source of like power. This is like a cheat code.
So why'd you give it up?
Because it's hard. It's hard. Yeah.
I have those kind of experiences, yeah. Just what you're referring back to, you know, when that kind of that idea came to you from somewhere. I have those kind of experiences pretty frequently also. Yeah. And it's like in the other story you mentioned about the synchronicity that you had on the airplane, mm-hmm. the text message and all that. I've just had so many of these experiences and I keep having more and more and more of them and weirder and more frequent, the more I go down the spiritual path and the more I go down, you know, the path of opening up our consciousness in all the ways that we do. I just can't, you know, it got to a point 4 or 5 years ago where I just, my reality had to break down, you know, my paradigm had to break down. I had to start entertaining other possibilities than the kind of, you know, pseudo rational construct that I had been trying to maintain for some time. I just couldn't do it anymore. And it's really fascinating when you start to allow yourself, like you say, just kind of allow, clear your mind, open yourself to other possibilities and allow that information to come in, what will start to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
I mean, the most powerful circumstance like that was like during my power activation,
mm-hmm.
when the rain started.
Yeah, that's, you were at that ceremony. Yeah, that's right.
That was...
Forgot about that one.
That was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life, probably.
Me too. Well, I don't know. I've seen some crazy stuff, but that was really wild.
That
really
was
weird.
Really wild. And I was like, at that point, because I was like, you know, we had talked over the phone and I was like, okay, what am I getting myself into? I wasn't really like convinced. And then that storm came out of nowhere in the middle of the inferno of August in July, where there were no clouds in the sky. Zero. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, universe, force, you have my attention now. I'll go into this with my mind fully open. Yeah. It's insane. Yeah. So
it's hard to explain things like that.
It's hard to explain it.
And especially when those kind of curious events and coincidences start to stack,
mm-hmm.
on each other. You know, it seems like it's almost every ceremony that we have, something weird like that happens. I mean, weather-wise, specifically.
Yeah.
Very weird weather. Usually has something to do with rain, and frequently totally unscheduled.
Yeah.
Like, let's say, in terms of a meteorological forecast, like not planned. It's very curious. I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
A lot of what you've been talking about has to do with this idea of truth. Mm-hmm. It has to do with, for you personally, your journey has a lot to do with finding your true path, purpose, mission, what is that contribution that would be, let's say, most fulfilling for you to make to the world, for the world. I'm trying to relate it back to the story you told me about your grandfather.
Yeah.
And the words aren't quite coming to me to describe like what that life was that you saw, that he led, that was so inspiring to you. Like, was it about what he created in the world? Was it about how he expressed himself? Was it about the kind of
everything,
peace and clarity that he had at the end?
I think it all comes together.
Yeah.
It's all integrated. And they're like force multipliers.
Mm-hmm.
They feed on each other, in a sense. There is something about developing and harnessing your gift and then giving it away. There is something there.
Mm-hmm.
There's some truth there and that's different for everyone. But when I started, my job is like very integral to who I am. And it started in a very selfish, ego-driven way, as most things for men in their 20s are, I think. The reasons I chose what I chose were more about like fulfilling my ego, my sense of importance, material things. And then the more I do, the more I sense that the only way forward is by creating things and then giving them away. Like, I started after the power activation, I started the podcast, and it was amazing, amazing. And at the beginning, I did it for myself because I wanted to have these conversations. They're interesting to me. That's the only reason. And then now I've been thinking about the podcast, and it's like kind of hit a place where like it's going, but it's like that excitement is not there as much. And it's like, okay, I think this is important. I think, I don't want to let this go, but I feel like I need to reframe it. And the way I reframe that is, it's like a way where it's not centered on me, and when it provides a value. So how can I bring value with this thing? It might seem trivial or small, but it does have, I do get texts from people. It's like, oh man, that really helped me. Like people that are in training and stuff like that. I was like, okay, this brings value. This has the potential to bring value. But I have to reframe it in a way that it's not about me. It's about giving value to other people. And I think through that, I will achieve it becoming something more than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's some truth in that, as we go through this life and as we gain these experiences, we find a purpose, one of our multiple purposes, and we dive ourselves into that. We have one of those 11 lives where we obtain mastery, but then I think somehow we have to give it away. In this whole mixture of like your practices, your mindset, the way you frame your actions, in this whole amalgamation of concepts, there, like you said, there, I hope that there will be this linchpin piece of that puzzle that will put them all together and say, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, this all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my wish.
But like you said at the beginning of the conversation, it could be that there's levels upon levels upon mm-hmm. levels upon
yeah.
levels, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I solved the puzzle. Oh, and it gave rise to a new puzzle.
It's like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, that's beautiful. That's the most beautiful thing about life, is it does seem to be truly infinite.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no upper bound to
yeah.
this thing. We can keep growing. We can keep learning. We can keep expanding our consciousness.
Yeah. The only way that I can conceptualize it is that, okay, if you come to certain truths and then you say that, you can materialize in this world whatever thoughts you have in your mind, you know, whatever ideas. And then you come to the realization that, oh, this is just a game. Let's just fuck around. Let's just fuck around. And I'm just going to, like, you know, live this life that it looks exuberant. But just because I'm having fun, that makes sense. That's how I can conceptualize it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way I can think about it. That's the only way it's like, okay, if I
that, what you just said makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I recognize what you just said as a form of self-actualization.
Yeah.
But that's different than what I hear other people saying sometimes, where it feels to me more like a magical thinking process.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where it's like there's still a subscription to an older belief system, like this older belief system in this concept of money and materialism.
Yeah.
And
it's like, I'm going to go do ayahuasca so I can manifest a Range Rover.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, that's not the point.
Yes.
Or maybe that's, I don't know. I don't want to be judgmental in it because, again, I feel like there's a comedical aspect to everything we do. And I sometimes find myself laughing at myself. I'm just like, oh, man, that's so funny what you're doing, what you're thinking. Because we fall in different versions of that trap. Some are funnier than others, but they're still funny. You know, the ones that we fall in are still funny.
Mm-hmm.
And other people see it in ourselves. That's the even funnier part. It's like you don't see it when you're doing it, but other people do it. And they point it out to you. Mm-hmm. And then if you catch when they're pointing it out, you're like, oh, yeah, that's hilarious.
I think that's so critical. I mean, everything you just said, I think when we take ourselves too seriously, that's when we're vulnerable mm-hmm. to the programs, to the fear, to the, you know, just falling into more rigid parameters of what we allow for ourselves in terms of possibilities or behavior, expression, our own evolution. I think when we can come to that mindset of like, oh, wait, this is a freaking super high fidelity 3D video game that we came here to play. We're here to play the Earth game.
That's exactly
how our mutual friend, the Mandarin Man, describes. He calls it the Earth game.
Yeah.
You know, we came here to play the Earth game, so let's not take ourselves too seriously. And when you can self-reflect and see the hilarity in your own beliefs, in your own behavior, in all these paradigms, all these patterns that have gotten you to this point, and then laugh at them and say, okay, well, what would I prefer for it to be?
Yeah.
That's self-actualization.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Courtney's great at that. Courtney's way, like, more wise than I am, which is hilarious because she comes in this her meat suit is this exuberant, bubbly, but she's really wise. So we played this game. My dream of my life is truly not exuberant. I have no desire for that. I've found the most beautiful moments in my life in my grandfather's farm,
mm-hmm.
in like the one, I have very few child memories, but one of the ones that stay with me is going with my mom to the beach. We lived like four blocks from the beach, and bringing like crackers and just crumbling the crackers and seeing the fish eat the crackers. So I know that happiness lies there. But there's this other part, which Courtney has, which is let's fuck around with it. Let's just fuck around with it. Let's just go big. So we played this game. Because I told her, like, when we're doing our conversation, we talked about that. And she's like, okay, let's play that game. So she said, all right, this is day one. You have, like, $10,000 and you have to spend it or you'll die.
Okay.
So spend it. Uh-huh. And then I said, oh, something stupid. Sorry. So I was like, okay, I buy a mountain bike, and a really nice mountain bike or something. Okay, so now you have $50,000. Spend it or die. And then you're like, okay. And then you get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm going to fund. You know, you end up, what you really want is like to end, basically, like give free energy to anyone, solve the homeless problems. Like they're really like the things that when you get to really ridiculous numbers are like, I'm going to like give the opportunity for everyone in the world to just have one psychedelic trip or something mm-hmm. like that. And it's, but it's a fun exercise. I've never played that. I've never allowed myself to, yeah, to be ridiculous. To like, yeah, one of the, yeah, many of the things I said were really funny, but in a ridiculous way. And I was like, oh, this is a very playful way. So I feel like there is a level of the game. And that's probably not the highest level of the game, but it's probably a level where like people like Billy Carson are playing, where they just become, yeah, they're just, okay, this is my meat suit. I figured out this key. I'm just going to fuck around for a little bit. And that's interesting. That's very interesting. But that gets mixed in with this like religion of prosperity version of alternative consciousness, which is a human trap. It just takes a different form because truth gets twisted. We twist truth. And part of this journey has been seeing like all these, there's truth in these things that we perceive as like not normal, like celibacy. We're talking, it's like, oh, I understand now why for men this is important. It has nothing to do with like being pure or anything. It's just like, it's a little cheat code that allows you to like have this other. So
it is, by the way, just real quick, it is super interesting to me hearing about your experience with that and making that connection between semen retention and celibacy, which for somehow had not occurred to me before just now.
Yeah.
That the now noticing the connection between celibacy as a tradition and a spiritual path.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Like light bulb moment.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
So there is a truth. There's probably some truth in the whole like religion of prosperity version of whatever it is that happens in the spiritual community. And the fact that, you know, at some point, maybe you get to a point where you just can fuck around with things and just like express yourself in whatever way you want to express
yourself. But I think that's what I was trying to say earlier when I was saying that self-actualization is more like a continuum that can occur at any level, any stage, any situation, any circumstance.
That has nothing to do with self-actualization.
I'm sorry.
I think that's just a comedic aspect of it, in a sense. It's a side quest.
I don't know about that. I mean, to me, it seems real tapped in. I feel like those things are really closely related somehow. Just the idea of, I see what you're saying about when you talk about let's just fuck around and see what we can do with these meat suits, or see what we could, you know, let's take the thing apart and see how it works, or, you know, whatever. I see what you're saying with that. And at the same time, it really strongly resonates for me as a part of self-actualization.
Yeah.
Like getting to that point of
being able to do that.
Comfortability.
Yeah.
With the idea that, again, you're not taking yourself too seriously. But at the same point, I think true self-actualization is not irresponsible or frivolous, which sort of brings us back around to another thing I wanted to revisit, which is values. Because again, how did you choose to spend your money in the game you were playing with Courtney?
Yeah.
I think that is very much a reflection of your values. So you give someone else, a different person, that same opportunity, you know, thought experiment, like here's a million, billion, trillion, whatever. Here's some money. You have to spend it or you'll die. What do you choose to spend it on? I think that very much is a reflection of whatever direction your inner compass is currently pointed, or an expression of your value system. But that idea of, so not like let's fuck around just for the sake of like, you know, trying to break the game, to come back to the video game analogy. I'm not going to necessarily like try to break the game, or maybe I will. I don't know. Maybe that would be interesting. Like, but more from a perspective of no longer being a non-player character, no longer being a scripted pawn, if you will, in the experience, but now becoming a player character that can try different approaches and figure things out, mainly I think for the purpose of like redirecting that experience back into an ongoing process of personal development or expanding consciousness, adding to experience, learning, growth, whatever that looks like. I think that whole collection, that whole constellation of attributes, I think that's the essence of self-actualization.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's kind of like what I said before, there is an amalgamation of action situations, thoughts, internal growth processes, that I feel like at some point there is that key puzzle piece that comes and lays in the middle, and then boom, I think that, you know, somehow you come to a state of being. Again, it comes to like actualization comes is action, and maybe coming to being in a state of self-actualization feels like an action.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. And in the dictionary definitions that we looked up before we started, that word action comes up a lot in all of the definitions of actual and actualize and all that stuff. But then additionally, that word actual, it means to make real. Mm-hmm. It means not fake. So that comes back to the concept of truth. Like there's something really critical about self-actualization that also has to do with authenticity, or that has to do with authentic expression. But then also, I guess, to get to that point, first there has to be a process of self-discovery.
Yeah.
Of like, well, what is my authentic expression? Yeah. What does that even mean? And that kind of brings me back to like that question about values. What are your values?
That's a really good question. I think my values, well, I think one of my values is curiosity. I think that is definitely one of my values. And I think one of my values is also like the concept of not being stagnant in a way, or not stagnant, or just like, or reaching a place and striving to like, to go to the next place. Like in everything I do, I just try to, okay, so I got this, so how could I do it better? Like, what's the next thing that I'm going to, like, how am I going to refine it? I'm always like...
So would you call that, like, continual improvement?
Yeah, I guess so. I think those are things that really define me, and things that, I kind of observe. One of my values, I don't know if it's a value or if it's a purpose, but in certain situations... I give people peace in difficult situations when people are like presented with life and death. There's a confidence in me that gives people peace. And I recently discovered that it's one of these things that kind of like, again, clicks and says, oh, okay, this is like one of my purposes in life. It's not to do the surgery. It's to give them peace in the process.
Hmm.
And I like that. So I don't know if one of the is serving in that way. Serving is too much of a broad term, but it's that one very specific thing that I think is part of my purpose that I truly value and care for and protect.
Yeah, I think a purpose could become a value.
Yeah.
If you value it.
Yeah.
Like if it's something that becomes important to you, if it's something that you hold dear, I think those are values.
Yeah. So I've seen so many things. I've been so close to death, other people dying for many years, that you feel like you understand certain things that other people don't get to see. Hmm. There are certain things that human beings do or act like, very nuanced things that you pick up.
But, well, I'm really curious about that. What kind of things do you see? What are attributes of how people respond to death?
Well, first of all, people know.
That they're going to die?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Days in advance.
How do you know that they know?
Because they tell me.
Oh, okay. And then they do?
They do. It's really crazy. It can be, a lot of people say, like, are afraid. I mention it in different ways, but I had a patient pass recently that was really, like, I hadn't had somebody pass in a long time, and she mentioned it multiple times. And I was very confident that she wasn't going to die. I was like, no, I got this. It's fine. And then, she made it past the surgery and everything. But then certain things happened, which, I always take full I believe in extreme responsibility in situations like that. So I always think it's always my fault. It's something I did. But there's some things that were external. But she died. It's crazy. And that's happened to me multiple times. Then people look at you straight in the face and they tell you. And some people, when they're not going to die, they're just afraid. And they're flailing and they're like chaotic. And when they die, they just have this like...
peace?
Not peace necessarily, but kind of like deep understanding.
Huh.
not necessarily peace, but just like this deep understanding that this is going to happen. I understood the lack of control. I think a lot of fear comes from like wanting to control the world. And one of the things I'm very grateful for, like understanding very early in my 20s, was the lack of control that we have in life. And the way I understood that was, you know, I did general surgery in North Philadelphia because part of me wanted to do trauma. So North Philly is like, you know, it's a rough place. We saw like maybe on the average Saturday, about 12 people come in shot per night, 12 to 20. So a lot. So you start seeing again, you see patterns and everything. So this kid didn't really fit the patterns of it. He was like, you know, dressed a certain way, African-American kid dressed a certain way. He just didn't fit, but he got shot in the back of the head. So we take him to the ICU, we stabilize him, and we're going to see if maybe, you know, we'll be able to, his family wanted to donate some of his organs because we had a transplant program. And then the grandma comes in with the Bible under her arm, crying, and then she tells me the story how she like raised them. It was like super, like did excellent in school, was going to college. What happened was that he was at the movies, was a girlfriend, and somebody said something to the girlfriend. He said something like, hey, like don't mess with my girlfriend or something, and somebody else came in the back and shot him in the back of the head. And I was like, man, I would have done that probably. I would have died. So this grandma really spent all this life raising this kid in the straight and narrow, right? Did the best that she could. She did it really well. And then something out of her control came, and just her life project, which was to give herself to this other human and have that human succeed in life, came crashing down. And at that moment, I realized, oh, there's absolutely no control in life. There's absolutely no control. So, and that is very frightening and sad, but it's also very liberating in a sense. Because I like, when you really integrate that, you just live freely because you accept death, and then you accept that you're not in control of it. So you're free. You're completely free to live life however you want to live it. Because at the end of the day, the thing that you fear the most is, like, there's nothing you... There's examples. There are people that do crazy things and then they die because they do those things. But there's other examples of people that do crazy things and live to, like, 90 years old. And there's examples of people that live in a certain era and die very early. So there's a randomness to them, to that, that's liberating but frightening in a sense. Mm. Yeah, those are the things you learn from death.
Wow. Death is not what I fear the most.
Yeah.
There's actually quite a few things above that on my list.
Yeah.
Of things that I'm afraid of.
I agree. Death is, I don't feel death as much. I do fear it. I'm not going to say I don't fear it. But there are, I think life, you know, certain, I can
there's,
see
there's
certain
way, there's
choices.
Ways of living.
Yeah, there's ways
of being alive that are much
that are
worse.
Way worse.
Seems to me.
Yeah.
But maybe that's my work. That's my process.
I think this...
Working my way through acceptance of that list and the liberation that comes from that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. I think a lot of people are afraid of certain ways of living that could be worse than death. And that can be very stifling.
Huh. Is there anything else about... I'm just so curious about this particular topic, just because of your experience. And I can just see, you know, I could see in your face, I can read in your body language and hear in your voice how much you've learned from this and how much it's affected you. Just witnessing what relationship people have with death when they're so close to it and when you're so close to it. I'm just curious if there's anything else in there that you feel is worth sharing.
There is, you know, we live with the fear of it, but when the time comes, there is an ex, there's a peace in the acceptance, and most humans instinctively, automatically get there. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about being afraid, because I think another fear that we have is being, knowing that we're going to die and being really afraid of it. When you get to the moment, there's a certain peace of a, there's an ex, peace through acceptance that I've seen a lot. And you kind of like, people understand, and then you have this innate understanding that this is just a process. Process in whatever game we're in. Mm-hmm. So I would say you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. We will all reach acceptance of death at the appropriate time, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we will all die. Yeah, it's a very fearless process when you're actually doing it. Hmm. When you're actually going through it.
Hmm.
It feels like a very natural process. You know, when somebody truly like passes away in front, I had a patient that had a lung transplant and didn't go well. And he kind of had, like, I was in the ICU, I was covering the ICU, passed in front of me, and the soul is a real thing too.
Mm.
The soul is such a real thing. It's like when the soul, you know it, like the moment when it happens.
Mm. How do you know?
You just know. Mm. It's just like self-evident.
Mm.
It's really crazy. If you really like, I remember another gentleman that had another kind of catastrophic situation where he didn't have any options to have anything resolved. And, you know, it was just going to be a couple hours. And he knew, like, imagine that. Imagine going to being in a place and saying, you have this big problem. You have about 2 to 3 hours to live. Fully conscious. Fully within your mental means. And knowing that. So I remember that. And, there was an acceptance to it. It was a very gracious way in which that person handled that. And I was there when he passed. And it was just, again, like, self-evident in a sense. Like, you know, the eyes were the same, kind of like they get to a point where, you know, breathing is very shallow. So it's almost imperceptible. And then, but then you kind of know. You look, and then you look at the monitors, and they're like, it's obvious. But then you knew before you looked at the monitors.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me. So two of your most important values, as you self-evaluate them, are curiosity and improvement. What are you most curious about as it pertains to self-actualization?
I'm most curious about, like, I'm sure there are other, like, cheat codes that I just don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in these things, and all these things are, all these truths are in the world. That's the other thing you realize. They're all over. You've heard them all your life.
Yeah.
These words, you've heard them all your life, and then you just have them put them together. So I know there's concepts that I've heard all my life that are floating around me. And then one day I'm just going to go like, okay, I get it. That's fun. That's
I agree. Fun. That's one of the most fascinating and fun experiences for me as well, is when one of these old sayings just suddenly drops in and like the light bulb goes off and I'm like, that's what that means. Like, this is some deep wisdom.
Yeah.
I can't remember who I was talking to, but I think I said to someone that I think those little sayings are the original memes, you know?
Yeah. There's so much like information in them.
Packed in these little compressed, like the original zip files that we pass down from generation to generation in these just traditional sayings. And I think that we don't know how to unzip them. We don't know how to unpack them in our lives, in this modern lifestyle that we have, because a lot of times they're opened up by specific experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had that when I was living, I don't know if you even know this about me or not, but I spent about 9 years living on a little ranch out in Wimberley.
Yeah, you told me.
Homesteading.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I had so many of those little meme bombs go off while I was out there gardening and hunting and learning how to do all of the kind of homesteading activities, just all these, I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but just all these old sayings that we're so disconnected. We don't have an actual connection to the real world in so many respects anymore. But you know, going out into nature, getting your hands in dirt, trying to grow food, building things, like just doing all of these tangible things in the physical world suddenly unlocks all of this knowledge that's like latent. It's not, I think it's both in our actual programming code, you know, in the memes that have been passed down to us, but also I think it's in our actual physical.
But it's also in the process of doing those things, because in doing those things put you in the moment.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So when you're in the moment, then this information comes. Like, it happens to me when I'm operating. I can be operating and then like 8 hours pass and I don't know like what the hell like happened during that time. But during that time, I get all these ideas. It's crazy. I'm like fully into something complex, but my mind is just like completely random ideas. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, that's a great idea. When mm-hmm. I get out of here, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you're right about that. I think there's something about a meditative quality to a lot of the kind of activities that you might do on a farm or on a ranch or a homestead that puts you into that quiet mind space where that information can come in, or your mind can just make those connections between the puzzle pieces that it just hasn't made before. But also, I think that there's certain kinds of knowledge that you just cannot get except through experience. Yeah. Like the actual physical practice of doing things, mm-hmm. of working in the garden and seeing the bugs, seeing the ecology, 100%. Watching a plant grow over a period of months and being like, oh, like I can't even, it's so hilarious to think that like at one point I didn't understand where broccoli comes from, that's what broccoli looks like when it's, like as it grows on the plant, like how interesting. All these different things, calling back to when you were talking about doing surgery and the planes of the human tissues, mm-hmm. and stuff, and I'm immediately recognizing what you're talking about from my experience with butchering.
Yeah. Exactly the same thing.
Same thing. It's like, well, you get in that groove and it's like, oh, it's like this thing's just come right apart and it starts to look like steak, you know?
Yeah, it's really funny because like, again, like back home, like we would, you know, whenever we would kind of celebrate something, Christmas, whatever, my grandfather raised pigs and we would slaughter the pigs. I would kill the pigs and slaughter the pigs. So he would actually like teach me like, oh, this is the kidneys, this is the lungs, this is, as a little kid, and then I end up doing this, you know. Mm. And he taught me all about like, oh, then you get here under this, and then there's like a little thing where you put your hand on, mm-hmm. and separate it and move it out of this way. So he like taught me how to fucking do surgery when I was like a little kid, which is really funny.
But I really believe strongly that those experiences, there's things that we learn from those experiences that are essential, mm-hmm. to our development, as humans, that we're missing. If we're missing that information, we're coming out strange.
Yeah.
We're coming out different. Yeah. Like you can't, there's just nothing you're going to read in a book, see in a video, see in a movie, or that anyone's going to tell you that's going to allow you to understand viscerally, emotionally, sensorily, all of the different information that comes in to crystallize that experience that then in my case gives birth to something like empathy.
Yeah.
You know, like I did not think that I was going to go learn how to hunt for food because I was, you know, on this mission for self-sufficiency, and then I was going to come out realizing like I've got to be nicer to people.
Yeah.
You know, like but these are the kind of things that you know we're fundamentally developing and being educated very differently.
Yeah. That's, you know, there's a difference between a rational knowing of truth and a feeling of truth.
Yes.
And that's where, you know, I didn't understand that for a long time.
Yeah.
Until you feel something true and they're like, oh, okay, this is different.
You were saying that at the beginning of the conversation too. I'm so glad you came back to it. What does that feeling of truth feel like, or what is it like?
It's just unshakable in your core. It's just unshakable. You're like, you understand that you could be wrong. I understand that, but I just truly feel that as a truth.
Yeah.
As a guiding principle. And there's a real sense of groundedness in it, in that I don't need to go argue about it. I have no intention to like convince anyone about it. I just know that this is like deep inside me. I know this is true.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it guides my decisions.
Mm-hmm. What's an example of that for you? Something that you feel to be true?
That we've been every human that has ever lived. That I, like, my essence is you.
Yeah.
You are Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan is Trump.
Yeah.
Trump is Mother Teresa.
Mm-hmm. You feel that in your core.
At all. In my core.
That oneness.
Yeah.
Of all being.
Yeah. Mm. Of all, exactly. And then that, you know, that the same experiences, like the wind has that, mm-hmm. that the trees, like the trees, yeah, have mm-hmm. that.
How does that knowing of your own divinity and the oneness of all being, how does that relate for you back to self-actualization?
I see the possibility of things. I see the possibility and I see my limitations. I can see them clearly and accept them as they are. That's just without judgment, in a sense. I just see, okay, this is my meat suit. This is my computer brain. This is my programming. But this is not me. This is just like my enclosure. And it's for me to figure out how I can remodel it, how I can open it, how I can, you know, transcend it in a way where it's okay if I don't. It's okay, like, I can just go through the process without a fear, like, if I don't get there in time, kind of a thing. It's like, okay, I understand that this is the game. I love that you introduced that, the concept of games. It's like, this is the game. These are the rules of the game. I didn't make the rules of the game,
mm-hmm.
but I decided to play the game. So let's play.
And guess what? If you don't get it on this life, put another quarter in.
Put a quarter in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's cool.
Yeah.
What would be the best advice that you could think of in this moment right now to give to yourself about how to achieve self-actualization?
Explore the process. Just explore the process. Just give yourself into the simplicity of the process. Complex things come from simple things a lot of times. So just give yourself to the simple, and kind of like the complex overwhelmingness of it will kind of, again, be self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
That feels true.
I love that. Yeah, that feels true for me too. I really believe things can be very simple.
Yeah.
You know, and again, common theme or central theme of our conversation, you know, because it relates to self-actualization, is choice. It can just be so simple. It's just a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Every single moment.
Yeah.
Is that opportunity for a choice.
Yeah.
What would I like my life to be now?
No. Yeah.
And it's a new story every moment. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is great.
Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you, Vision.
Thanks for joining me for this sacred conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And don't forget that the conversation can always continue. We can build on a topic that we've already talked about, and we can also start new topics and see how they all weave together. And that's just the exciting thing about this whole journey of exploration, is we don't know where it's going to go. But I'm really excited to find out with you. Please don't be shy to reach out and schedule your sacred conversation on whatever topic is interesting to you. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to talking with you soon.